guys want to start?
We could start.
Yeah.
Or we could just watch Swordfish.
Can we just watch Swordfish,
dude? Swordfish.
Yeah.
Just like what I'm doing.
Are you recording us watching Swordfish?
I am.
Okay.
Let's just leave it on in the background. We can leave it at a low level.
That's true.
So, like, yeah, just, you know, we'll let people know this is the Swordfish episode. Scientology blackmailed him into making this movie.
Well, that Battlefield Earth, of course,
yeah.
Also.
Yeah, well,
which is a genuine.
He was so excited.
I love Battlefield Earth.
He was so excited.
He is so good in that movie.
My favorite
is laughter. Have you seen
the laughter?
The laughter.
My favorite line of all time is in that movie when Forrest Whitaker goes up to the the guy being enslaved who learned how to speak, you know, dreadlock alien or whatever. And he fucking, he says something to them in their language, and Forrest Whitaker says, "How the blast you know about that, man animal?"
the terrible director, Scott Christian, he, like, wanted to direct it, like, put a stamp on it, so, like, everything is a Dutch angle. Every single shot is canted.
Yeah.
Like, every one. It's like, you know, it's supposed to be, like, for dramatic effect. Yeah. It's not supposed to...
What if humanity was enslaved by corn?
I don't call that slavery, my friend. I call that freedom.
The American way.
It's just like...
language is just that, like...
While you were still learning how to spell your name, I was being trained to conquer galaxies. Oh, you're too much!
It's okay.
Bonus content.
We can break in with Swordfish, you know,
yeah,
as appropriate. But on a personal level, it's the holiday season. It's Christmas time, and like I always say, to give is to receive. Even more so when you have some sort of platform to broadcast your benevolence to the world. So, how'd you guys like the gift basket I got you?
Thank you for the Zabars. The black and white cookies. I've been slicing off like big chunks of the babka.
Let me ask you, when you eat a black and white cookie, do you eat one side first or do you try to get like black and white in both?
Yeah.
You split it down the middle so you get like the perfect halves.
Yeah. Okay. Yep.
Will got us a triple parentheses gift back. Triple parentheses.
Nothing but globalist treats.
Yeah.
Also on the holiday agenda, Felix, you're back. You've been on a vacation.
Hey, Felix, bringing Atlantic City over.
No, Felix just got back from Westworld. this is dark Felix because it revealed his true soul.
He does have a black hat on.
Yeah. I have a black hat. Well, you know, it was a really fun vacation. Got to see people I hadn't seen in a while, which is always great. You know, it was also an emotional vacation to me. My ancestors did come to Chicago, but they landed on the East Coast first, and as I went up and down the Mid-Atlantic, I saw the racism factory that my great-grandfather first worked in.
Felix, could you stop talking for a second? Because this is the Halle Berry nude scene.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
We missed it.
$1 million
right there.
Wow.
So you had a good vacation in Westworld, Atlantic City.
Right. I won money gambling, and I've only lost money gambling before, so I think, like, now that I won money, I'm never going to lose money again. Because that's how it works. You just break good.
Can I pull the room? Do slot machines count as gambling?
Fuck no.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, they do.
That's
it's a game
shit,
of chance,
yo.
Bitch. It's a game of chance, and you get to play prestige TV slot. I play the House of Cards slot machine.
It's gendered. Like, wait, gendered. Yeah, it's sexist that that's not gambling.
Yeah,
you're
because
treating
that's what women
those old ladies like they're not actual addicts. Why would you take them?
If you, when you win on like the House of Cards, like he says House of Cards shit every time you like repeat a bet,
awesome.
He's like, oh, there's more than one way to pluck a rooster. It's a good machine. But no, it was great. I saw, I went to Baltimore. Baltimore is great. Every problem that I have with New York, it's not in the Mid-Atlantic. Way less people. The pizza's thicker.
Boo.
And, like, it's marginally better train systems in some places.
But also the setting of the documentary series The Wire.
The Wire. As a writer for Vox, who went to Little Lord Fauntleroy School for boys who sleep in oxygen tents, I can tell you it's the most realistic show ever. That's what drug dealing is really like. I know.
I call it Bodymore.
Bodymore
Murderland.
Yeah, Murderland. You brought up the House of Cards slot machine, and that I think will be the good segue, I think, into, you know, the funniest thing that happened this week. A lot of funny shit happened this week, but one of the funnier things that happened this week was the House of Cards tweet storm, epic farking tweet. Yeah. Thread.
All right, let's do some game theory.
Yeah, guys, can we do some game theory?
Yeah.
Actor analysis. Halle Berry got paid an extra $1 million to show her tits.
If you put in column 1B, John Travolta wears a really cool goatee that went out of style until 2013, and now it's cool again.
Game theory is where you just talk about movies. It's where you talk about the movie The Game with Michael Douglas, right?
My theory about this is it's all fucking dream, man.
So this is the thing that happened this week. This is a guy anonymous until now, right? Like, I have no idea who this guy is.
An unsung hero of the internet.
I had no idea who he was before. I think most people didn't, and they're all pretending like they did.
Yeah, yeah. They're like, what are you talking about? He wrote the NatSec blog, Prometheus's Treadmill. don't know about that blog?
If you go to the guy, Eric Garland, right? Yeah. If you go to his website, like, it just says stuff like, the strategies to win the future, like, know the moves, like, win the game. And it's just like he does like motivational, like tactical speeches for like 20 grand a pop, you know?
It's like PUA techniques for entrepreneurs.
Basically. Yeah. One of my favorite digressions is that someone would like ask him like, damn, you're on fire. And he's like, I'm running off craft beer and Adderall. And I'm just like, when you're like an adult just saying that like I'm on Adderall, that's just saying like you're on speed.
When you mix Adderall with alcohol, like you're
He didn't say I'm medicated though.
Yeah.
Yeah, he said, I am doing drugs right now.
You know
which is like the only way you could do 128 tweets threaded together.
You know,
I will do drunken tweets, but I run out of steam after like 10.
Yeah, I think the longest one threading thing I've ever done was like maybe five. Yeah, like maybe 8 or 10.
Does the Giamatti count? Yeah. Well, except for Paul Giamatti.
Giamatti is a lifelong project. That's like
beautiful.
Yeah, exactly.
Beautiful.
It's like how it took like hundreds of years to build, you know, Notre Dame. It's like that. You know, it's not like all in one night.
Like the thing, like basically the entire point of this moronic.
It had a point?
Yeah, well, the point was that.
I only read a few of the tweets.
No, well, that's the thing. It's like people read them out of context and they're like, oh, this guy's onto something. But if you put them all together, it's just gibberish.
He's having a nervous breakdown.
I saw just a few, though, a random sampling, and I wasn't like, there's something here. I was like, oh, these are the ramblings of a madman.
Like the entire point is that basically, like, Russia has. Got America to distrust the CIA.
What the fuck, yo?
I can't believe they did that.
I can't, they shook our faith in the institution that we all know and love.
They got the CIA to sell crack. That's amazingly devious of them.
And that, like, you know, Snowden and Glenn Greenwald and Chelsea Manning are all, you know, agents of influence. They're traitors, blah, blah, blah. You know, essentially by revealing things that are true about Western intelligence agencies gets people to distrust them. And that's the problem. I will say, though, I mean, most of it was stupid. But the one point that I thought was actually vile that crossed the line is when he referred to Chelsea Manning as, quote, a character so feisty, so fragile, was the quote. And it's like,
oh my God.
Is a person who's currently being basically tortured to death in solitary confinement.
Yeah, the libs really show their hand with the way that they talk about Chelsea Manning. Like,
yeah,
they genuinely, like Joanne Reed, like they take glee in the idea that she's like suffering.
Right. I mean, at best, they treat Manning in this condescending manner, like, oh, crazy little Manning. Yeah. And at worst, they're like, sort of treat her as an insect that needs to be squashed.
Yeah.
Did you guys read Sam Chris's piece about this?
Yes.
That was fantastic. Yeah. We should link to that. I mean, Sam basically says everything that you need to know about. But like, the point is that like this whole thing blew up because so many people embrace this as being like, wow, like this is the statement that explains everything. Like, this guy's on fire. Like, the usual suspects all were just like A+ writing, bud. And this should disturb us all that like, people who with, you know, some
it's the
level
new
of
Federalist
influence
Papers.
In, yeah, yeah. What's her name? Clara Jeffrey Claire said Jeffrey. It was the new Federalist Papers.
Oh, my God.
Again, something written
yeah,
that
the
guy cranked
up on Adderall.
Yeah, the
people that were gushing over this were, you know, were...
And by the way, fucker, the new Federalist Papers is Hamilton, obviously.
I actually think it's the Federalist Magazine itself.
But I think we should find this disturbing because, as sort of Sam points out, is that basically, as he coins them, the alt-center have now basically lost their mind.
If, oh, they're
if
not.
If they're keying unstable. Into this and, like, yeah. if they're vibrating at the same frequency as this guy, I mean, like, that's yeah. troubling. They're having
unreality
issues.
Liberal elites and politicians have retreated into a fantasy world.
A strange thing happened. Eric Garland got hopped up on his kid's Adderall and tweeted... Iken has WikiLeaks.
Ethically. I like that you specified craft beer.
Craft beer.
Just so you know, I'm not a piece of shit. I'm a smart, intelligent person that drinks craft beer because it would be seen for what it was if he just said like High
I'm
Life.
Fucking drunk.
Yeah, I'm subjecting my brain cells to the Holodome more by mixing Adderall and alcohol, but at least it's racist uncle staph infection IPA.
Well, the worst part about this, aside like the actual content of what he was saying, which was drivel, it was all written in this like the internet house, like the Wonkette,
yeah, the Wonkette,
the Wonkette house style guide, circa 2005, where it's just like Vladimir Putin, epic douche waffle, rolling on the floor laughing. Iken has. Documents or something like it's just like
obviously the election of Trump has broken the brains of all of the libs and they're retreating both into a conspiracy that comforts their beliefs and dispels their doubts about their candidacy and about what they were trying to get, you know, behind, and also like they're already kind of flashing back to the Bush years. You know, like they were already talking. They're already talking, kind of like pining weirdly for the Bush years when Trump looked like he might maybe win, because then they would get to be hashtag the resistance.
Yeah.
And so I guess that means
we're
going to go back to like that means I guess part of that is we're going to go back to Web 1.0 speak.
Yeah.
Somebody's going to have a website. It's like Donald Trump ate my balls.
Yeah. Yeah. Donald Trump is a chimp. I think the first thing is important, though. I obviously want to talk about the meme cat speak more, but the first thing is important because, I mean, this is sort of like the stab in the back theory. Like, the liberals have to believe that there was a decades-long Russian conspiracy to make them look like ineffectual governors of society and out of touch and stupid, because there's no way that could have happened on their own. They didn't lose all those midterms on their own. They didn't kill the public option on their own. The media didn't, you know, blow its relationship with the American public on its own. Our institutions didn't fail on its own. We were just stabbed in the back by some rootless tracksuit-wearing cosmopolitans.
I was going to say, the other disturbing thing about the Eric Garland phenomenon is, once again, how just frighteningly... similar it is to Carl Digler and shit that we just jokes Ooh, that we've yeah, done yeah, on this yeah. show. I didn't know who this guy was until like a couple days ago, and then like he did this whole thing, and then it comes out. Felix, could you elaborate for us on this guy's Carl Digler angle?
Usually, if you want to see somebody's family court tweets, you have to dig them up. They're like 2 or 3 years ago, and then like they learn to be woke and like not tweet about the conniving bitch judge Murtaugh who hates fathers, but. After, like, every journalist was like, this guy, he, big cup of wind. He won the internet in 2016. You, my good sir, have earned yourself a mother bitching beer. He was like, now that I have all the goodwill, I can start tweeting about the real shit. And he immediately starts tweeting about family court. I think he said immediately, like, the day after everyone sucked his dick, he was like, family court judges shouldn't care who you fuck. It's not their business.
I hope that he did that entire tweet storm just to get everyone's attention.
Yeah.
So that he could bring
to get
light
to the real
how
issues.
Fucked up.
Yeah.
It's family court.
Yeah. It's like a fan man was raising awareness for family court. But so, you know, of course, you just search his name and like judge alimony and shit. And so this is like many stories. This has a auspicious beginning. And he goes, you know what? I focused on my wife and kids enough. It's time to focus on my career. It's my time.
Yeah, no. I think Virgil found like the life comes at you fast moment where like you could see like the dates of the tweets from like 2012 to 2013, and 2012 was like, I need to focus on my career right now. Like, sorry, wife and kids come second. And then like 2013, he's like, sometimes life just doesn't work out the way you want.
Yeah, and then in like 2014, he's like, the sexual revolution caused women to divorce good men.
He was replying to Radio Tom. I think on the low, one of the absolute worst people on Twitter. I fucking despise him. And he was replying to like, it took me getting divorced to really realize like the damage that the sexual revolution has wrought on our society. You were right about that, Tom.
Yeah. I love the idea of these guys in DMs being like, these bitches, man.
Yeah.
But that one wasn't even like the most interesting thing to me because I didn't know who that person was. It was Tim Wise's fucking shitting his diaper.
Oh man.
But I was like, wow, this is where we're at now.
Okay, can we give some background on who Tim Wise is for people who don't know?
Tim Wise has...
He's a professional ally.
Yeah,
he's a professional ally.
He's basically the safety pin box in human form.
Yeah. He has like a variation of the Ken Burns haircut, if that helps you understand who he is as a person. Like, he doesn't have an adult man's haircut. And he talks a lot about privilege, and he desperately wants a cool black friend.
He's been around for years doing this.
Yeah, yeah. So the weird thing is, he's never had any kind of, like, no one has ever taken him seriously as an intellectual. He's a very professional, managerial classes kind of anti-racist thinker or whatever. And he went apeshit on Russia.
Yeah,
yeah.
As not like political objection or anything. He just like became an anti-Slav, like fucking
the brain pans of these wretched people.
Mr. President, if I may speak freely, the Rusky talks big, but frankly, we think he's short of know-how. I mean, you just can't expect a bunch of ignorant peons to understand a machine like some of our boys.
I may or may not have insinuated that everything about his entire career stems from his weird racialized sexual anxieties.
This is all
a sex thing. You can't be that like that and not have it come back to a sexual anxiety.
It's always that.
Yeah.
Like I'm going to read one of his thoughts on Russia. Now, I want you to keep in mind this guy's big contribution to society is like going to Oberlin and going like, how come they give white people Burger King when they get arrested? Being paid $100,000 to do that. Seriously, when your contribution to the world is Fabergé eggs, autocracy, and pogroms, no one should much care what you think. With each new day, I know why part of my family left shithole of Imperial Russia. 100 years...
That's not how you spell shtetl.
100 years after Lazarev, let's hope for another one. Come at me, broski. Come on me, broski. I mean, come at me.
That was exactly the Josh Barrow line about Russia.
Yeah. Why are these guys so proud of their country? That's
like,
just a piece of shit.
How fucking ignorant do you have to be to say of Russia, what is their significant cultural output?
Aren't you a writer?
Yeah.
Like,
well, I mean,
the
I
you know, the Russians.
He's Josh fucking Barrow.
All right, hold
on. You want to call that writing? We need another word for whatever everyone else is doing.
We have a sorry. I was trying to remove it now. A day later, was trolling I guess it stands for particularly ethno-nationalist with earlier Russia tweets. Shouldn't have done so the way I did.
He was doing an irony.
Glad to own mistake. We all make them. Sometimes you just say that every Russian is an insect.
Yeah.
And that's not meant as an insult, Mr. Ambassador. I mean, you take your average Rusky, we all know how much guts he's got. Hell, look at all of them Nazis killed off, and they still wouldn't quit.
Can't you stick to the point, General?
I neither hate Russians, 1/4 of my family is from there, nor deny their achievements. Was bad attempt to use stupid white gnat trope against them. I hate it when you try to use someone's own logic to defeat them, and you accidentally say that this group of people is basically livestock.
I hate it when you're so obviously trolling cultural chauvinism, and people think you're literally culturally chauvinist.
Well, you know, irony is a double-edged sword.
Yeah,
he's just not good at it.
Yeah,
because he's not a good writer. He's not a good thinker.
I have at least 30 tweets about how much I hate the French. No one has ever thought I actually hate the French. There's clearly not a misunderstanding.
As long as we're making apologies to ethnic groups we've slandered in the past, now that we've gotten a write-up in the Irish Times, I would like to apologize.
Yeah, bog-dwelling potato eaters.
I just want to be 100% clear. Everything we've ever said about the Irish on this show applies to Irish Americans. Yeah, not actual Irish people.
They're a different
Irish
species.
Yeah, absolutely.
All times that we called the Irish at large bog creatures, it was actually an attempt at irony to defeat white nationalists by their own logic.
Yep.
That's Eric Garland, Tim Wise. Can we move on now to Seizuregate? Probably.
Wait, what? Did I miss this?
Seizuregate?
Have I been so hopped up on NyQuil and codeine that I completely missed this?
Kurt Eichen? This is a Kurt Eichenwald thing that happened this week.
No, I missed this entirely.
Wow.
This
is Amber, real good. This is a joy.
Can we do... There has to be a prequel to it, and it's called My Large Kung Fu Sons.
Okay, so I saw that shit. Yeah. That was amazing. That really was absolutely good. Amazing.
To recap, Kurt Eichenwald... we've spoken about him on the show before. Senior Newsweek reporter. Has just been... And on fuego. I mean, the guy is just like, you know.
He's trying to save the republic, sir. What are you doing for this nation that is any way comparable?
He's putting out a body of work now through the medium of Twitter that I think is like almost unparalleled. Before someone found the large Kung Fu Sons tweet, in which basically he said, hey, buddy, if you ever try to attack any of my sons, they're large and one of them is a Kung Fu master.
They're rowdy as hell.
All right, here we go.
I have it right here. By the way, for anyone thinking about threatening my kids, they're big. And one is a kung fu master trained in China. Those kids were as large as lightning. I asked him if there's kung fu training for taking down someone with a gun who's outside of your reach. He said yes, he'd been trained.
Wait, how do you use kung fu to take away a gun from someone who's like well outside your reach?
You don't.
This is right-wing fantasy, like the only
it's
way
the 21
to
foot rule.
Yeah, yeah. It's like when I'm wearing my cargo jean shorts and some hip-hop thug points a gun at me, I unleash the arts of the Orient.
Yeah. Almost as good as Kung Fu Sun is when someone found a thread where he was replying to, back in the Clock Boy controversy, he was replying to Anil Dash, and like someone said to Anil something rude to Anil Dash, and Kurt responded to both of them, and he was like, Anil, like, ignore that guy. He speaks for the Trump Fox News like vision of the world. Your son's engineering prowess is like great. You should be proud of him. He thought Clock Boy was Anil Dash's son.
That's so good.
There's so many levels to that, because obviously LOL that you think he's your son. Also, the clock sucked. It was not
engineering prowess.
Dude, it was a piece of shit.
Start a clock.
What's he talking about now? Why is he back in the news?
Because like, you know, 'cause he's been on. Okay, so basically, he made a TV appearance he was interviewed by Tucker Carlson on Fox News. A hostile interview. Did you guys watch that?
Oh, no. Wow, yeah.
Tucker doesn't wear the bow tie anymore, I've lost sexual interest.
I mean, now that he's no longer a child and a young man at the age of 53, he had to give it up.
Yeah, he finally had to start dressing like an adult man.
Yeah.
So it's a particularly loud scene in Swordfish here. So I'm gonna have
We actually watch Swordfish before... And during every show,
we got the biggest TV.
By the way, I open palm slap movie in. It's Swordfish, and I'm doing all the moves.
For the listeners, we're being video recorded now. I have my personal videographers here at the Trap Palace, but. Nick has just bought probably the most incredible television I've ever seen.
It's so beautiful.
It is so big and crisp.
We were watching Attenborough earlier. We were watching Caves.
That's the best one.
Season. It's so good. Oh, shit. I was freaking out. It was so beautiful.
Everybody watch Planet Earth, especially if you have on a 4K television.
The
screen itself is like the size of like a Rembrandt painting.
It's
like
my height. It's actually my height.
I love it. It's fantastic. Sorry. Back to Kurt, everybody. So he had an extraordinary interview with Tucker Carlson in which... I mean, it was bizarre. It was like he was losing his mind. He was holding up a binder of Tucker Carlson falsehoods. It was very strange. I mean, basically, if you do an interview and Tucker Carlson comes off looking good and sane, buddy. And then in the course of the interview, he said that he had like anonymous CIA sources that had like, you know, a message for Tucker, but like he couldn't. Or then after what? after he said it, he was like, my anonymous CIA sources have a message to Tucker. And he said this on Twitter, like after the thing. And then he was just like, oops, I lost my notes. I don't know where it went. Very, very strange.
Yeah.
Very
strange. But that's also very like my dog is telling me to kill people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Large Kung Fu son of Sam.
Well, it's like, I just love that he clearly imagined when he was going to confront Tucker Carlson and he was going to pull off an Aaron Sorkin,
yes,
like dressing down that was going to be viewed throughout the nation. Like people were going to stand up in their living room and clap.
Dude, this,
along
well, that's,
to
that,
it.
Well, this goes back exactly to the Eric Garland thing. Like these people, their minds have been melted by Aaron Sorkin and the West Wing. Well, like, they're living it.
I mean, it's perfect confluence actually with the Kung Fu Sons because Kurt and these people believe that, like, through martial arts, you can, like, fucking use chi to blast a gun out of a guy's hand. Or if you do Krav Maga, you can rehearse enough to be like, well, you know, if a guy comes at me with an M16 at this angle, I'm just going to do this move and that move and this move. But, like, real life doesn't work like that.
Yeah, well,
you need
not
live training, and they think of verbal confrontation the same way. They're like, when Tucker goes, how dare you, sir? I'm going to go, how dare you, sir? And then I'm going to take out my documents, and then, ooh, yeah.
Yeah, these,
oh,
these
God,
aren't
I dropped
really
them into the gravy. Ah, damn it. No,
these aren't
my
really
pants
ideological
are off. Oh, Jesus.
These aren't really ideological people. They really they just spend all their time fantasizing about having a dramatic moment.
Yes, yes.
So like he had an accident on television
moment.
And then was like trying to follow it up. And then of course the people who hate him or are trying to wind him up. What happened is Kurt has written in the past about how he suffers from seizures. And apparently some deplorables have keyed into this fact, and one of them replied to him with a gif of just, like, strobing colors and shapes and said, you deserve a seizure for your writing. Kurt or somebody replied to it with, this is Kurt's wife. He's having a seizure, and the police have been called. And now Kurt is saying he's taking a Twitter break to pursue legal action, like an assault case against the person who sent him a gif.
Wait, but, but you're missing the part that the person who sent him the GIF was called, like, Oven Kikeberg. and like, the Kurt's wife tweet was like, Oven Kikeberg, we found your information, which leads me to think that Kurt just Googled, like, Oven Kikeberg money scene.
Sorry, holy shit, look at what Travolta is wearing right now.
Dude, he looks like a doppy.
He has a beret on.
This is what the best line I said earlier. He's about to shoot the betraying senator, Sam Shepard, noted playwright Sam Shepard, and he says Thomas Jefferson shot a man on the White House lawn for treason, and it's like that didn't fucking happen. Well, you can't just make things up, John Travolta.
He can.
And with the beret too.
He's wearing a beret.
Yeah,
he looks so.
And as we discussed in Travolta's
that, by the way, Travolta that shot, and we should probably use that as the cover.
Definitely.
Image if we can find it. That. Him in that fucking outfit is how all these guys think of themselves. Eichenwald.
Yeah.
That's who they think they are.
They're always getting off a helicopter.
Yep.
And like,
and then they're confronting a treacherous senator,
Glenn
a perfidious
Greenwald.
Criminal or something. Yeah. And being like,
they're meeting
and then
Glenn
they
Greenwald,
and then they light him up.
Of course, the senator is fly fishing.
Yeah.
This is what all senators do.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I like to take a long break from my day of evil and fly fish.
Well, I hope that Kurt actually does pursue this legal case, because that would be a landmark fucking case if it made it to the Supreme Court or something. The idea that you could be charged for assault for sending somebody an image over the internet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there's got to be a lawyer. Who's
well,
like
but also on Twitter, don't you have to press the button
to press
make
play.
The GIF run.
A deplorable just sent me a piano that he instructed me to string up above my head and fell on me, and now Tweety birds are flying around my skull.
And also, like, flashing lights can cause seizures for epileptics, but it's not like, oh, you don't have time to notice that there's flashing lights.
Or notice that Oven Kikeberg sent it to you.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Oh, what
and
message
said,
does my
said,
friend Oven
and
want
said
to send
you
me?
Deserve a seizure.
Yeah.
With yeah. the GIF.
So like I said, Kurt's taking a break to pursue legal action.
I'm a truther about this. I'm a truther. I'm sorry.
So like everyone went crazy because he was like, this is Kurt's wife speaking. Yeah. Kurt is having a seizure right now.
Hell yeah.
And I'm on Twitter because I'm concerned for my husband and I want people to know what's going on.
We don't have time to litigate it, but we should mention that he has a history of lying. Oh hell yeah.
Such a weird dark history.
Yeah,
like,
he does.
Honestly, it's too weird and fucked up. I feel like I don't even want to talk about it without knowing more about it. But like the whole thing with him and this like child pornography investigation that he did
is very, very weird.
He's a fucking strange dude.
Hands, we can't name a band. Free the pedos.
Yeah, that was Seizure Gate, but. Matt, you alluded to this earlier, and like this comes back all around now about how these people are losing their minds.
Nick is standing behind me now.
What's up, Dak?
Eating a carrot out of a Bugs Bunny cartoon.
So good. Oh my god! Sorry, I fucked up.
By the way, guys. Sorry for our fans. There was no fucking way we could follow up the Adam Curtis interview from last week. This is disgraceful. We're just having fun right now.
We're
just
playing like shits out there.
Yeah, my vacation never ended.
We all went to the same party last night. We're all a little hungover.
Yeah.
Not me. I teetotaled, bitch, as I always do. Islam is light. I'm not hungover. So.
This is totally, totally disorganized.
Oh, let's talk about the party.
Yeah. Okay. We all went to the DSA fundraiser and Christmas party last night, and it was a grand old time. Amber, you've been involved in DSA for you're a long fucking time. You're a vet. Yeah.
Yeah. Before I knew any of you, certainly. Yeah.
How long? You said you joined in college.
Yeah, I did. I've been at 8 years or something, going on 8 years.
That's like 2 presidential terms.
Yeah. I spoke last night. Yeah, I was one of the speakers. This is the most tragic thing. I was like, it was told to me that I was like their celebrity speaker. Uh-huh. We need better celebrities.
Well,
please,
Dad
if you're famous,
spoke to.
If you're publishers aren't celebrities, they just think they are.
But by the way, it was just, you know, everyone gets up and then, but Amber, you were in like a fur coat. And you were in a fur coat.
I was in a fur coat, and I was in a fun little party dress, and I had nice stockings on.
It was reminiscent of the Countess Markowitz.
Yeah, I spoke about my time in DSA and about how it's very important that people get involved in a big tent socialist organization, and the people before me we're talking about like, well, you know, we're working on this civil rights legislation that would protect people from, abuse by the police. And we've got this, you know, this labor campaign we're working with. And I'm like, hey, guys, I'm on Cody. by the way, I got sick, and now I'm on the good stuff. I'm not just like hanging out with codeine. But I was definitely just like messed up. And I was just like, OK, well, I don't have anything extremely meaningful to say, so I literally talked about how cute everyone looked. And
well, you said it's important to look fabulous.
It is important to look fabulous. I am a luxury socialist in that I want everyone to have a few little luxuries, feeling good, enjoying yourself, leisure.
But like the DSA is sort of having a moment now, right? Like, it's
we've had an explosion in membership. Chapters are popping up all over the country. It's going crazy. It's very exciting. People are sort of plugging into local campaigns in their area, and it's, you know, it's not a party, and it's not, you know, some sort of vanguard organization. It's just sort of a place to find comrades, and right now it's more.
So if someone out there decides to join DSA, like what can they expect? Like what should they do? Or
if you want to get involved, you can either probably join a local chapter if you're in a large area, or start a chapter and the national office will put you in touch. They're hiring a bunch of new people now, so like there's been so it's been such a surge in membership that we've been able to, and we're member funded, and we've been able to start helping people organize new chapters in different places. And chapters sort of plug in kind of locally with local union stuff, local legislative stuff. The point is at this point to grow and actually like create a left institution. And then maybe someday they'll be so powerful that I will be able to denounce them from the left as a communist, as reformist trash,
that is, yeah,
and start my own splinter group.
But that is, I mean, like, like, what is the goal? I mean, like, they're now almost like 10,000 members nationwide,
mm-hmm.
which is impressive, but that's still very small. Like,
very
for,
small,
for a giant country like America, like,
more
there
people
are way
are
more furries. Yeah,
more
there are
joining.
Members of DSA.
Well, you know what? That's not a you know for the Venn diagram.
That's true. Yeah, yeah. There's overlap.
No, they were all very attractive, young, cool people last night. And that's been the most exciting thing because there's been this huge generational gap. And for a long time in the local, it would be me and like a bunch of old Jewish men from the Bronx who belonged to the Communist Party when they're and like that was like a lot of our base, especially
women
in the city.
Should speak when spoken to.
Yeah, that was where Bernie learned all his misogyny.
Yeah,
from those
yeah.
guys.
from the
that gap is so fascinating because, as you said, yeah, you got this new influx of young people and you got the old crusty guard.
Well, the Cold War really killed. The Cold War killed interest in socialism. It created a scare around it, obviously.
And then you just
but it's
had a
over.
Whole,
the Cold War is
yeah,
over.
But,
baby.
No, but now there's more interest in socialism, and I think particularly a lot of young people after this election, as we have come to the point where they're like, we can't rely on the Democratic Party. What like if they're going to join the DSA, like what's the goal? Like, what does the DSA want to do in the next like year or so?
Generally, like the two entryways into socialist politics that people tend to lean towards are, you know, party politics and labor. DSA kind of, you know, they were very active in like Kashama Swant's run,
mm-hmm.
But they tend not to be particularly
candidate focused. Or
yeah, yeah, you know, small races certainly, but you know, it's. You know, there's not a lot of candidates to represent us. So I think, you know, it just really depends on
now,
the region. And it's kind of, you know, our goals are sort of trying to adjust to the terrain.
Now, I have gotten questions on my Curious Cat now,
oh
which is
God.
My main, you know, source of interaction with the public. Specifically about DSA, because, like, for better or worse, like, I feel like the show is basically, I feel like we're sort of being associated with them. Yeah. And, really, how would you respond to the criticism that people say? The most common one is, like, they just say, well, DSA, they're just going to, like, they want to push the Democratic Party to the left and just funnel people back into the Democratic Party.
Well, that is the Harringtonian, like, that was the original line of you know, Michael Harrington. You know, they would talk about, like, to the, you know, left of possible or whatever, but a lot of it was about invigorating the left of the Democratic Party. Michael Harrington is very dead. And mm-hmm. so are a lot of Harringtonians. The thing is, it's not a particularly, at this point, because of the changing demographic, the organization doesn't really have a, you know, strong policy at this point.
Mm-hmm.
We tried doing that is the problem. And, the, you know, it's not even necessarily that pushing the Democrats to the left would be a horrible thing, but it doesn't work.
Okay. I was going to say, I'd take it.
Yeah, yeah, you know? I wouldn't turn it down. I'm not yeah. kicking that out of bed, but for fuck's sake, I mean, we've been trying to do that for a very long time.
But it's not in bed, is the point.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's got to be in bed before you can kick
it's
it
not
out
in bed,
first.
Yeah.
yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, there definitely, that's sort of, that was the original kind of goal of DSA, but at this point, we're, you know, having to think about new strategies because, you know, for people our age, it's been pretty obvious that, you know, the Democratic Party is not for us. It's not for left people. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and like people, it seems to me that a lot of the people who have preemptively dismissed it as an organization, considering how much flux it's in because of this
yeah.
new movement and new membership, it's just people looking for an excuse to keep not doing anything. You know,
yeah.
it's just another way of being like, oh, well, that's I can just dismiss them and then continue complaining
yeah.
and not doing anything.
Well, unfortunately, there's no such thing as an isolated socialist. You're not doing your job if you're not working with other people, regardless of whatever.
And that's why I'm so heartened by, you know, the growth there, because like I love what we do. I love making fun, roasting the libs and like. Examining the pathology of power as it currently exists, but we also like need, like Adam Curtis said in the last episode, we need to start thinking about a future and an alternative. And like, it's not going to happen on podcasts. It's not going to happen on Twitter. It's going to happen in the real world with people talking to each other and becoming creating solidarity and creating organizations of people who can
make.
We have to be building institutions. It's not just going to be some sort of organic fandom or whatever.
Yeah,
right. I mean, the idea that we could, you could build any type of social movement out of consumption of media, even if it's our perfect media.
Yeah, don't stop watching the show, for
rowdy
the love of
Kung
God.
Fu Master Media.
Keep watching, keep listening to the
most
show.
Revolutionary podcast, okay? The fifth greatest Patreon of all time, folks. But it's an inherently liberal idea that consumption is politics.
Yeah.
Politics is politics.
Yes.
And we're never going to give you a comprehensive vision of the future because that's not what we do. The real comprehensive visions of the future, I've heard, are from people in DSA.
And that's what's needed. And how it's going to be put together is going to be a collaboration.
Yeah.
It's not going to be promulgated by, you know, people from any kind of exalted position, because there really isn't anybody in an exalted position with anything approaching a positive vision. I mean, everyone with an exalted position, as we've seen, has been driven insane,
mm-hmm.
and was delusional and is now like insane, I guess.
Now they're part of the hashtag resistance.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
For me, the most haunting
if they're
article.
They're the resistance. Yeah. Just send me straight to the fucking firing squad.
Imagine the Hezbollah flag, but the arm is holding up a prescription of Xanax. And but resistance, I've said it once, I'll say it 1,000 times. Resistance just means I will tweet about this again.
Yeah.
I will come back and speak to the manager.
Yeah. There will be posting.
Well, yeah.
Like, okay. So Obama gave this press conference the other day where he was like,
"Oh, the libs were going to kick the door open."
Yeah. There's so many people,
yo, motherfuckers.
I love how they just betray their racism when they talk about Obama. They're like, "I can't wait till he comes in there and he has a fresh new fade." And it's like, "What are you talking about, weirdo?"
He's not the black person of your fantasy, Tim Wise.
Yeah, yeah. Tim Wise, like, he's going to go on there and he's going to look directly in the camera and say, "Mr. Putin, you bitch, motherfucker." Also, Tim Wise can say the N-word.
Well, I think a significant chunk, I think we're like really expecting him to be like, I'm canceling the transition.
Yeah.
Like, we're putting it on hold. Like, you know, I am the state. I am the law now.
Look at me. I'm the captain now.
L'état, c'est moi.
And, like, what he did was what he's always done, which is just hem and haw and be like, let me be clear, folks.
We're going to respond to
Russia.
Stuff happened. There was some influence by some Russians, maybe.
What I love about this is that
Vladimir Putin has a lot to think about for what he's done with himself.
I think Russians should ask them, is this who we are? Is this who we are as Russians? No, but what I love about that is, like, and the disappointment with, like, you know, him and Hillary just basically just ghosting entirely.
Yes. Yeah. Fantastic.
Like, this idea that, like, throughout the entire Obama presidency, like, whenever you would criticize him from the left of being far too conciliatory to the right, you know, never ever fighting for anything and just, like, trying to govern bipartisanly. And, like, the line you'd always hear from these same people was, you don't get it. This is no drama Obama. He's above all that. He knows that power doesn't work like that, you know. Like, it's all behind. He's not, you know, out there. It's all behind the scenes or whatever. And it's just like, my answer to them is, well, this is your guy. Yeah. Now that you need him, this is exactly what...
He's handing over the presidency to a serial rapist game show host who wants to turn America into the Running Man.
Right.
And... there's nothing to stop him. The reactionary, psychopathic snake handlers hold all three branches of government. There's every single minuscule, like, those wonderful incremental reforms that they were all so proud of because they show how adult they were, that they take pride in the slow boring of hard boards. Gone. All going to be reversed. They're going to replace Medicare with block grants so that, you know, the governor of Arkansas can build a whites-only water slide. And... it's like, it's a real example of what C. Wright Mills called crackpot realism, where he talked about these cold warriors who were so obsessed with what we need, what was realistic in terms of fighting the Cold War. But their premises were insane. Like, what they were operating off of was an insane premise. And the entire Obama era and Clinton era Democratic Party has been operating off of this insane premise that we can totally disengage from actually doing politics or having a base. We can just operate on, like, the technocratic level and make deals And stay behind the scenes and, you know, do nudges, and we're still going to be a viable political party.
Yeah.
That premise was insane. And the thing that haunted me today, this week, like talking about stuff that happened this week, was that article in Politico about the Michigan campaign.
Yeah.
Yes.
And,
yeah.
And like, that is why I wish, I hope that like a great director someday makes a movie about the Hillary Clinton campaign. Maybe Adam Curtis, maybe Werner Herzog, maybe Paul Thomas Anderson, somebody like that, because it... The Clinton campaign was the entirety of post-70s managerial liberalism in miniature. It was, we have our charts, we have our data. They say we don't have to campaign in Michigan. They say that we're going to have these states in the bag. But what? Just like, look at our charts. They say that NAFTA is a net positive for the American worker, and people are going to appreciate the cheap stuff that they can buy at Walmart. Meanwhile, the middle of the country is just turned into a fucking howling snake pit of fentanyl addicts and empty factories. And the whole time, they're just totally oblivious to the ground completely collapsing below their feet. And then they look around, and they're in the fucking hole, and they're like, how the hell did we get here?
The only way that the Russian conspiracy makes sense is if Robbie Mook is like Kerry Russell and Matt Reeves on The Americans. Like, it's the only way the Russian... Like, you cannot tell me, like, Russia threw the election unless you can prove that they had agents working at the highest levels of Hillary Clinton's campaign.
Unless when the Michigan campaign called Brooklyn and said, hey, we've got people want lawn signs. The voice came back, oh, no, we do not need you to have long signs. Long signs, no less. We have your algorithm. It says we don't need long signs.
How about instead of lawn signs, we give you big fur hats?
How about for campaign slogan, love Trump's hat?
Like, we send Lena Dunham.
I mean, what is the Russian explanation? Did the Russians cause Democrats just to not pay attention and make gifts while Scott Brown won a special election in Massachusetts in 2009? Like, what? How much can you blame on the Russians? Because they
used a bunch of sexy honey trap, like, you know, Natasha Badenovs to distract people from actually making decent policy decisions over the course of the last 12 to 16 years. And that's how they.
If there's a Russian mole in this, the one that makes most sense is Obama, because Obama got elected in 2008 on a combination of the backwash of a disastrous Bush presidency that everybody had turned on, a economic crisis that literally happened in the middle of the campaign, and a personal charisma that was basically a once in a generation talent, and they won it easily. And the lesson that Democrats took we've solved this. We can win the presidency forever now. And it was entirely based on
just keep catching lightning.
It was entirely based on his charisma. Meanwhile, the Democratic Party under Obama continued with policies that made every Democrat who wasn't Barack Obama, who was just some, you know, dickhead comptroller running for state representative in Ohio or something, unelectable. Like, he became literally the only Democrat who could get elected in a lot of the country. And they didn't realize it. And then that's why Hillary Clinton's campaign was premised on, well, we have this model and we're going to use it. But instead of the incredibly charismatic once-in-a-generation politician who beat her when they ran against each other, we're going to run the incredibly tainted, just deeply disliked, anti-charismatic person. And it's going to work the same way. And no, it did not.
I mean, look, let's interrogate the insanity of this kind of realism. I mean, we can gloss over the insanity of their foreign policy, that we're going to defeat Al-Qaeda in one part of the world by making children afraid of clear skies because that means that they're going to get incinerated by robots, that we're going to fund every side of a war in Syria. It's just, if you... like the Eric Garland tweet story, if you write it all out on one page of paper, you go, holy shit, this is fucking insane. But their domestic political program was that they just assumed, because Republicans were so good at elections, that we were going to have Republican houses of Congress forever. And the only backstop against that would be a Democratic presidency. And since we have a permanent 51% coalition that no one's ever going to stop showing up for, that it's not that Obama's especially charismatic and knows how to appeal to people. That, you know, that unusually likable guy that we put in there who just really didn't do a fucking thing? Okay, what if we had the same thing, had 30 years of baggage, and she vomits and faints a lot.
And she won't right. drink water.
Like, write this all out on paper as your vision of the future, and you just see somebody who's ruined their mind with Xanax, probably.
Oh, dear. Well, Swordfish is almost over.
Yeah.
So
I have to go to the bathroom for 5 minutes because of a certain scene in this movie.
Swordfish is almost over, and before the show ends this week, I actually want to give a shout out to a fan who, again, I want to just keep encouraging people to send me things. Fan of the show, Ursula Felice Lawrence. She makes French Republican wall calendars. I'm holding it right here. It's very cool. Matt, you're the history guy. Can you explain the concept behind the French Republican calendar?
It's the dorkiest undertaking in the history of Western civilization, and I love it for that. A bunch of highly analytical, I guess would be a nice way of putting it, gentlemen in the revolutionary French government decided that the old Julian calendar was bullshit, and we need a new one that is more rational. So they also had, as part of that rationalization process, had introduced the metric system, which has taken off. It works very well. You know, everything's by 10. You don't have to memorize the conversions. But they decided to basically make time metric. So they got rid of the ragged unevenness of months. You know, some days have 30 months, or some months have 30 days, some have 31, some have 29. What? Every 4 years? What's going on? So they divided time, the year, into 10 months, all of which had three 10-day weeks. And then there was going to be and that left a week at the end that was going to be like a week-long festival.
But like all the days are like named after different like fruits and like harvest item.
And every month is named, they're kind of shitty portmanteaus between French and Greek about different, it's about that time of the year, like Thermidor, which is in the summer, that means like hot, you know? Fructidor, which is, I believe, in the spring, is, you know, about fruit. Ripening and stuff like that. It's just so nerdy that I can't not love it.
Yeah, these people would be steampunks today.
Yeah.
Well, I'm looking at it, and we are currently in the month of Frimaire, which is frost.
Yup.
So we're in Amber's month right now. Uh-huh. It's Amber's time.
I mean,
of year.
It's always my month. But, yeah.
And you can look back in last year's, or no, in this year's 2016's calendar. Election day was the 18th of Brumaire, which was both the day of Napoleon's coup and then the title of Karl Marx's book about the ascension of his failed nephew, Louis Napoleon, to the throne. And I really do think that of all the comparisons that get thrown around about Trump, the most elucidating one is Louis Napoleon. So once again, I say, yeah, check out the 18th Brumaire.
I'm just looking at the days of this month are named for sugar maple, juniper, something called grubho. Oh, it's a grubho. It's a farming implement.
Grubhub?
Yeah. Truffle, olive, and crickets.
Awesome.
There you go. So happy Frimaire, everybody, and Merry Christmas. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Cheers.
Bye, everyone.
Hollywood is. They make shit. Unbelievable, unremarkable shit. Now, I'm not some grungy wannabe filmmaker that's searching for existentialism through a haze of bong smoke or something. No, it's easy to pick apart bad acting, short-sighted directing, and a purely moronic stringing together of words that many of the studios term as prose. No, I'm talking about the lack of realism. Realism. Not a pervasive element in today's modern American cinematic vision. Take Dog Day Afternoon, for example. Arguably Pacino's best work, short of Scarface and Godfather Part 1, of course. Masterpiece of directing, easily Lumet's best. The cinematography, the acting, the screenplay, all top-notch. But
they didn't push the envelope. Now, what if in Dog Day, Sonny wanted to get away with it, really wanted to get away with it? What if, now this is the tricky part, what if he started killing hostages right away? No mercy, no quarter. Meet our demands are the pretty blonde and the bell bottoms gets it in the back of the head. Bam, splat. What, still no bus? Come on. How many innocent victims splattered across the window would it take to have the city reverse its policy on hostage situations? And this is 1976. There's no CNN. There's no CNBC. There's no internet. Now, fast forward to today, present time, same situation. How quickly would the modern media make a frenzy over this? In a matter of hours, it would be the biggest story from Boston to Budapest. 10 hostages died. 20, 30, relentless, bam, bim, one after another. All caught in high def, computer enhanced, color corrected, directly taste the brain matter. All for what? A bus? A plane? A couple of $1 million that's federally insured? I don't think so. Just a thought. I mean, it's not within the realm of conventional cinema, but what if?
Well, there's a problem with that movie.
Really?
It wouldn't work.
How come?
Audiences love happy endings.
Chino escapes with the money. Boyfriend gets a sex change. Live happily ever after. No?
No.
Ah, homophobia.
Bad guy can't win. It's a morality tale. One way or the other, he's got to go down.
Life is stranger than fiction sometimes.
Wow.